Back on downtown on a Tuesday afternoon, it's time for this week's Message in the Bottle, brought to you by Bangor Wine and Cheese Company, 86 Hammond Street in Bangor, and the lovely and talented Eric Meehan joins us. Hello there, sir.
Hello. I am lovely, and I am moderately talented, so thank you.
Have your ears stopped ringing after Five Finger Death Punch? Because my house is still shaking.
You know, I must say, and I noted this to my son, who I brought to the aforementioned Five Finger Death Punch concert, although to us it was really more The Who and Megadeth, but it was fun to see everybody, that I was really impressed that my ears were not ringing horribly the way that they tend to be after concerts I've either performed in or attended. The mix was really good. I've heard other people, you know, it's obviously we were in line with some folks getting in who had driven from 4 hours away. They asked how the venue was. I said, I actually haven't really been in this current iteration of the venue except on stage for the Chamber Awards, but so I didn't really know. But the mix was good. I was not in pain in any way. that horrible sort of mystified headspace that you're in after, you know, like you're not really sure if you're pretty sure you're sober, but you definitely don't feel like you are. It was none of that. It was really, I appreciated it because that can be quite a bit. And my son has now seen his first metal show. So
that's awesome.
The demands for drums have only increased, though.
So. Oh, that's boy.
I had a funny feeling once he got into it. This is true. We sat down for a sound. All of a sudden, he heard something, and he's like, Dad, that was a gunshot. I was like, no, son, they're sound-checking the kick drum. Get thee ready.
Yeah, we could have one of those right in my room, Dad. That would be great.
Yeah, wouldn't it be great, though? Many, many props. There's a wonderful documentary put out right now by Stephen Perkins, who's the longtime drummer of Jane's Addiction, amongst others, all about drummers and you know, professional drummers or whatever. And they talk to a person. They talk about, you know, how kind and amazing it was that their parents allowed them and indeed encouraged them to ruin every possible free moment of, you know, during their childhood. And you know, the refrain is, of course, look at them now. And speaking of look at them now, look at my 2-0 Giants now.
Man, I'll tell you what. I mean, they haven't beaten anybody, but who cares? 2-0 is 2-0.
Hey, listen, you play who's on your schedule.
Right.
And 2-0 is 2-0. And I believe they're going up, however, against Cooper Rush and the Dallas Cowboys next. So we shall see. But crazy times indeed in the greater northern New Jersey, southern New York area.
I'm a Dayball believer. Bring it on.
Hey, man, I'll take it. I'll take wins because I've seen a lot of losses.
Exactly.
And I'm over it. We are last week, everybody put up with my rant about Fred Franzia. Much appreciated. RIP, I suppose. But let's get back to Italy. I've had the pleasure of tasting some extraordinary new vintages coming from some of the places we're going to talk about today. But we're going to sort of touch the rest of the northern part of Italy, and it's fairly robust. So I'll, as it were, watch for the changes and try to keep up. So the most important place, I suppose, we can start. We'll start over, you know, in the far east. So we're talking Friuli. Friuli and Slovenia really share important wine country. And it's if you can sort of imagine like a snake coming down north to south, south of Austria, there's a river that basically comes right down and cuts right through like a snake. And so on certain parts, the optimum facing southwest vineyards are in Slovenia, and in some of them they're indeed in Friuli. Friuli is also known as Friuli Venezia Giulia. They do a lot of Pinot Grigio, but they also, interestingly, are doing Bordelais varietals really spectacularly. We're talking Merlot, we're talking Cab Franc. They also grow a grape called Refosco, which is not a Bordelais varietal, by the way, but a sort of a slightly grippy but at the same time, almost, you know, floral on the nose wine that is you're really starting to see come into the United States, and is one of these things that you can sort of, you know, we're heading out of the time that this would be relevant, of course, but chill on a hotter day and still have with something, you know, kind of nice and charred off the grill. But of course, as I said, the real king of Friuli is Pinot Grigio, and truly, and this is definitely the case in my store, the best Pinot Grigio for the money, and that meaning less money than you could spend, is from this area. So that's extraordinarily important. Now, moving just west of there, you do have the Veneto, which is, of course, named after the city of Venice. The Veneto is sort of a two-clumped area, some of it around the city of Verona, and then the rest just north of the city of Venice. In that area, of course, the biggest wine, grape, whatever you want to call it, the grape itself is Glera, and the wine is Prosecco. Of course, that's probably, I mean, besides Chianti, probably Italy's most famed exported wine. It is made in a single-stage fermentation called the Charmat method, which I believe we've talked about here before several times. And that is mostly grown in that area, as I was saying, around the city of Treviso, so north of Venice. But the other important things, which are in near Verona, are clustered around the gigantic lake, which is sort of right in the middle of northern Italy, called Lake Garda. And this is where you have your Valpolicella, and then this is made, of course, into Amarone. You also have the white grape Soave, grown in this area, as well as some other grapes of note. The appellation Bardolino is here. You may have heard of that. So there's a lot of this wonderful, because to bear in mind, so you've got the Alps, and then the cold air is rushing down, but all of a sudden it hits this huge lake and it gets moderated. So, and the south end of this lake, Lake Garda, you can actually ripen some grapes that wouldn't normally ripen even on the other side of the lake itself. The lake is that big and powerful, a weather moderator, as it were. So anyone who likes the Amarones, which are, of course, made taking the little Valpolicella, the Corvina grapes and the Rondinella grapes that you would put into Valpolicella, and drying them in these rooftop, these attic areas where they reduce the liquid to about 70% of original, and then press the grapes. And then, of course, not to be wasteful, and we here in Bangor are frugal ourselves, so they take those pressed skins and everything, and then let those skins chill out with some fresh Valpolicella, and that's how you get Valpolicella Ripasso. So lots of wines that you've probably had come from that area. Just north of there, of course, north of Lake Garda, you have this long valley into the Alps, with the city of Trento being sort of in the middle and going up to the city of Bolzano. This area is actually the most prolific producer in all of Italy. They make a lot of crap. They make a lot of really good stuff. I hope I can say that word on public radio. I don't know.
Yeah, you just did.
I can't just edit it out in post-production.
Sure, yeah, we'll do that.
There you go. But some of the absolute finest wines in all of Italy come from this area as well, especially up in the northern reaches of this valley, where most people, as I'm fond of saying, are blonde-haired, blue-eyes, and look like extras from The Sound of Music. The last names are very often Germanic in nature, not Italian in nature, and indeed in some of these villages, they do, I mean, it's certainly not the sort of Hochdeutsch that you'd hear farther north in Austria and such, but it's what it is. And they grow, of course, Pinot Grigio, that's nobody's surprise. But then they also grow absolutely beautiful colder weather varietals like Pinot Noir, Pinot Nero is what they call it there, of course, right? Müller Thurgau, Tyrol de Go, which means king of the Tyrol Mountains, which is the mountain range that you're really in there. Le Grain, which is sort of like Merlot. It's a little grippier. And indeed, they grow Merlot there as well, if I hadn't already mentioned that. So a lot of really, really cool wines coming from this cool climate area of Trentino, Alto Adige. And also, by the way, this is a leading area because of the cool weather and the sweeping winds. A lot of really green producers are found in this area. Alois Legater is probably the most famous. They can do that because the climate is absolutely perfect for not having to spray any chemicals or anything like that. So a lot of very good, healthy alternatives from there. How am I doing on time, sir?
We've got about 2.5 minutes left.
Okay, fantastic. So really quick, just sort of the rest of the north. The other part that we haven't really hit is like Lombardy, which is the focus of Lombardy and the area around it is, of course, the city of Milan, which is not, there's no real good wines from there, but the whole plain around it is mass-produced Planck wines. But you do have some really, really beautiful wines. And especially as you get down into, you're getting into Emilia-Romagna, which we'll hit next week when we talk about Sangiovese. But near the, along the Po River, which flows down, and around the city of Modena, which is, of course, very famous for balsamic vinegars, you do have, of course, the wonderful wine Lambrusco, which goes as you get into the city of Bologna. We all know what sort of meats come from Bologna, and as well, of course, wonderful cheeses, and the Lambrusco really cuts through that. So that is sort of, in a nutshell, the rest of northern Italy. Like I said, next week we'll delve into middle Italy, which is where Sangiovese is absolutely the king, and some other wonderful wines exist as well. And in the meantime, just let everybody know, I just tried some amazingly good wines from Fess Parker, and we are tentatively setting up a tasting with the representative who actually has a camp up here in Maine and lives there pretty much year-round. So good Maine people, and really, really exciting wines that surprised me, having sort of been jaded about the Fess Parker estate for a while. So yeah, things to keep in mind for the future. We're trying to get back to normal, folks. It's
nice.
Wonderful.
I'll bring my coonskin cap.
Very good. Exactly. Cool. Well, I'll talk to you all next week, and thank you very much.
Thanks, Eric. We appreciate it. Catch you on Tuesday.
Cheers, Rich. Bye-bye.